This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Goal setting shouldn't just be a check-the-box exercise. It requires deep reflection and thought about what's important to us, why, and how much we want to stretch ourselves in the year ahead. Goal setting is a critical aspect of what makes up high-achieving salespeople. But like anything in sales, it's not just the end goals that matter, but the process that we use for making them happen along the way. Creating a deeper connection to purpose and our values is often what makes or breaks achieving them. Gene Torrey is someone that has spent years coaching others around big goals one step at a time. She's a board-certified health and wellness coach who helped burned-out high achievers master mindset, take command, and reclaim a life that energizes and aligns. And as she says, there's nothing quite like getting started to keep you going. Gene, thank you so much for being with me today on Mental Selling. I've been really looking forward to talking with you.
Thank you for having me, Will. I'm excited to be here. I love the timing.
Given the time frame of when people will be hearing this episode, as one year is ending and another beginning, this idea of goal setting always crops up in the time and consideration and reflection that should go into it is a great area to turn our attention to. It's an especially important area, an issue for salespeople and sales teams as they set their objectives for the new year. I'd like to start at a high level and then we'll get more specific as we go. Let's talk first about why we set goals and why they shouldn't just default sort of thing, whether writing them down matters and whether it really matters about this idea of connecting goals to purpose or not.
Why set goals? Why do we set goals? I work in a space with a lot of high achieving people. They are no strangers to setting goals. They've been doing it for a really long time. They probably were in high school setting an outcome goal around what college they wanted to get into. It gives them a target. They're in college and they set their targets on, you know, what that job is that they want, maybe even as specific as who they want to work for. I've worked with people who had very specific goals around, I want to work for this company. For a lot of people, it creates a target. It gives you something to focus on and work toward achieving that. In that sense, it both helps us go after what we want and lights the path to get us there.
Is the idea of making them really meaningful for us, that idea of connecting to purpose, how does that increase the likelihood that people actually achieve their goals?
Depending on the kind of goal that people set, people will, especially we're talking about the new year where we have all different kinds of goals. We've got the professional goals, the company goals, personal goals. With that can come that initial motivator, which is enough to get us started, but it's often not enough to keep us going in the long term. So as a coach, I have to be really careful and I train coaches as well. And this is a very important training point. You'll have clients come in and they are really excited. They present as very motivated. They have their reasons why this goal is important to them. But it's important not to jump off at that point and start drilling down on the goal. You want to spend time connecting that person and helping them build out their reasons why, connecting to what's most important to them, what their purpose is, because this is what's going to get you through the rough patches, through the disruptions, through the down points. And the bigger your library of why and purpose, then the more you can tap into what's going to help you meet that moment and move through it. So it's rarely our initial reasons for pursuing a goal is enough to carry us through those moments.
Especially in sales, there's a confidence factor as well when it comes to setting goals and striking that balance between stretching yourself and maybe not going too far to something that's unattainable. You want to have the confidence and the belief that you can achieve something greater than what you've done before, but you also want to give it more reflection than, oh, as a salesperson, I brought in this amount of revenue for the year and I'm just going to do that plus 10 or 20% next year. It requires more deliberate thought and reflection than that.
There's going to be a big difference between the person who says, yeah, that was pretty good. That's a good target for next year. And that's their stopping point. And the person who says, okay, I did that kind of reveals I can do a lot more. So let's move that target. When I take clients through a process, that ending point of that stretch goal can be overwhelming until we begin to break it down. Okay, that's your big goal. That's the stretch goal that you're setting out in the future. Now let's zoom in and let's start talking about what's going to help get you there. Combined with the self-belief that you can get there, along with breaking it down into next steps that feel doable, then it's a winning combination to continually move you forward. There are other parts of that equation that's also going to contribute, including, as you've mentioned, the reflecting and having systems in place to do that. But the person who has done all of this work on the front end in terms of identifying the goal, stretching themselves, and identifying why it's important to them, really knowing their purpose in going after it and coming up with the plan, writing it down, like all of these things work together. And that person's outcome over the year is probably going to look very different from the person who just does a quick check-in. Yeah, that was good. I could probably do a little bit more and goes from there.
I forget where I've read it before, but I've seen and heard it before that this idea of simply handwriting down goals makes you X percentage more likely to actually achieve them. Is that something you've seen as well?
This is why I love goal setting. It has become a surprising favorite part of the coaching process for me because it has revealed so much. Most people set the goal, usually an outcome goal, and off they go. And in coaching, it goes a little deeper and we explore a little more and it reveals a lot. We'll have a check-in. All right, you set an action plan for what you were going to do in the last 2 weeks, the last month. Tell me what some wins were. And when they come back and say it didn't go as they had planned, maybe they didn't get anywhere close to what they had hoped to do. I've learned to check in around this, and in part from my own personal experience, which I'll share about writing down goals. But the question is, on the scale of forgetting, I forgot this was a thing I said I was going to do, to, oh, total resistance. I knew I had to do it. I had it written down. I didn't want to do it. So between forgetting and friction, where did you land on that spectrum in terms of the last couple of weeks? That says a lot. So if someone is forgetting, that's a completely different plan forward than if they are meeting this goal with resistance. So writing goals down, and so now I go on the front end of this in setting goals. How are you going to remember that this is a thing you said you were going to do? And this is where clients pull out their phone, they create alerts, and everything's an experiment. So if they wrote it down and it still got lost in the shuffle of life, okay. So you wrote it down, but it wasn't visible to you. What can we do to make this visible? That's where that check-in reflection piece is so important. Like, all right, what worked? What didn't work? And let's make sure we're addressing the right thing.
And that check-in and reflection shouldn't just be something you do at the end of the year. You want to reflect and check in on your progress early on in the, how am I doing, whatever, 1 month in, 2 months in, that sort of thing. So you're not waiting and setting yourself up for failure.
The most successful people are checking in and pivoting where they need to. They're pulling through what's working. They're letting go of what's not. It's that constant iteration. We approach this as an experiment. We're going to see what's working and what doesn't, so we can constantly address and adjust as needed to move toward that big goal.
We'll talk about this a little bit later when it comes to the role of sales leaders in helping their teams set goals. I would imagine that one of the reasons that somebody, quote unquote, forgets their goals or forgets about them is that they weren't really involved, invested in creating them in the first place. They're handed down from on high. You're so much more likely to remember and keep those goals top of mind if you were the one that came up with them, or you're at least a very active participant in setting them, right?
You've got to have ownership in those goals and at least have a connection to them in some way, shape, or form. That's why in coaching, I don't set goals for people. In a business setting, like you said, we may have those handed down to us. So connecting to what's my purpose for being here? What's important to me about meeting these goals? And if I can find as many ways as possible to connect this to different areas of my life, not just contained within my professional setting, that's really going to fuel my drive to go after these goals. Checking in once a year, not being a great thing. So my birthday's in December. So it's close to that whole new year resolution phase that we, some of us embrace and some of us reject. I decided this next year between 49 and 50, I'm setting some big goals. I wrote down my goal. It was a process goal, which we can talk about. I knew exactly what I wanted to accomplish, and I wrote a letter to myself as if I'd achieved it. My plan was to open it up on my 50th birthday and pat myself on the back and rejoice in my huge accomplishments. I wrote all this down. I put it in an envelope, sealed it, and I put it in my journal. Fast forward to my birthday, I open it up and I bust out laughing. I was apparently, I forgot about this goal the second I tucked it away in that envelope. And it was such a huge lesson for me that it's not enough to want it or to even write it down. I need a system for remembering that this was a thing I said that I wanted to do. Fortunately, I accomplished things that I was really proud of and happy about that. But that was just such a lesson for me in that it takes more than just saying it, writing it down, wanting it. There's a lot of layers to successfully going after what you want and staying after these long-term goals.
Well, and like you said, it's different for everybody, but there's that visibility aspect of it where it's great to write it down, but if it's written down and put in the third drawer of your desk or whatever the case may be, then it's out of sight, out of mind. So what works for you, and maybe it's having that handwritten note or list in front of you at your desk every day, but you've got to put different aspects of it in your phone or whatever, because otherwise you'll lose it.
You'll absolutely lose it. And just because you tried one thing doesn't mean it, quote, doesn't work. It just means you haven't found the thing that keeps it front and center for you. So we approach it as an experiment.
Our previous conversation before we recorded, I talked to you about how I was personally trying to get better at a couple of specific goals. And I would write down goals every year. I want to do more of this, or I want to get better at that. But it didn't go any further and it was vague. And what I've found is that then by writing down and monitoring on a monthly basis, the sort of, I don't want to say micro, but smaller pieces toward attaining that has really made a huge difference. So it's not just some vague, I want to be better, I want to do this X amount more than last year, because it's hard to quantify. And it's also makes it an easier sort of can to kick down the road.
It does. There are bad goals, there are great goals. And the more dialed in and specific you can get, the more you set yourself up for success. Like you said, big, vague goals. I want to do better. I want to close more sales. I want to be healthier. Your brain wants you to succeed. So the more information you can give it, the more you're going to set yourself up for seeing opportunities in front of you to align with what's important to you and to take action toward those goals. I set a goal that I want to eat better. My brain doesn't really know what to do with that. But if I say, you know what? My goal is that with every meal, I'm going to have a fruit or a vegetable. So now when I go out to lunch or I enter a space and it's time to eat, my brain is looking for those things so I can align with my goal. Specificity is helpful.
Can we talk a little bit about the role of comfort zones or being uncomfortable? To what degree should goals make us uncomfortable?
If a goal doesn't excite you, it gets really easy to talk yourself out of that it matters. And when you're setting a goal, you want to set yourself up for success by being excited about it. A healthy degree of discomfort around it, I think, is a good litmus test. But also the one way of measuring that I use in with clients, we rate confidence and, but also around their vision. Why is this important to you? Where do you want to be a year from now? Is that they feel a pull toward this. They really want it. When you've done the work of that why, your purpose, and you have this goal that is a little bit unnerving, but in a good way, those two things together, it's a little unnerving. We've done the work around tapping into where you have experience and expertise, where you've succeeded before, what your strengths are and how you leverage those regularly, that you have this built-in optimism going into it that, okay, yeah. This is a bit of a stretch, but confident that I can make this happen.
It gets back to that idea of if you break down the goals into smaller bite-sized pieces and you can achieve the first, second, third of those bite-sized pieces, it creates sort of a confidence snowball effect. I can do that. I did this piece. The next one might seem less daunting.
That is part of the process I take people through, because the goal on its own, big goals on their own can be daunting non-starters if we only look at the finish line. And that's where a lot of people get tripped up in both setting goals and trying to get started, is they try and jump into the finish line, where they want to be a year from now, 6 months from now, as opposed to, all right, now that's the long-term goal. Let's zoom out and look at what are our next steps here. I love to run. I do some run coaching. Even right now, I've done marathons. Can I run a marathon tomorrow? No. If I thought about that as I've got to take that on without working my way up to that, does not seem possible. But if I allow myself the steps to get there one step at a time, not only possible, I'm excited about it. I feel good about it.
Our CEO and one of our partners has just finished writing a book. And I think about the idea of if the goal was just, we want to write a book, this book that comes out in February, it would seem the most daunting uphill climb ever. And without having support and pushing ourselves into all of the different smaller bite-sized components that was going to build on the next, on the previous thing and help you get iteratively there, it would never happen, because it can be such a hole like that. Like, I want to write a book is a Herculean task without breaking it down.
If that's where our thinking stops in terms of a goal setting process, then that becomes a non-starter for so many people.
Let's talk a bit about the links between goal setting and the traits of high achievers, because I know you've got perspectives about that.
I've discovered a few common themes. One is that high achieving people who come to me are growth oriented. They're growth minded. So they're always looking to what's next? How can I get better at this? And they're no stranger to grit. They're determined. They're passionate. They'll persevere. And that shows up in coaching, is that they keep coming back. They're willing to reflect and adjust to move forward. They're often very outcome oriented. Again, been setting goals their whole life, but often they're outcome based. So what gets lost, often at the expense of really appreciating and experiencing the benefits of reflecting on the process, it's everything hinges on the outcome. Another trait that I see is all or nothing thinking, which can serve them really well in some circumstances. If it's getting a project across the finish line, going all in to close a particular deal, like sometimes that really serves us well. What we're going after is contained, that there's not this expectation of ongoing, sustainable consistency. But there are some goals that it's really beneficial to pursue things in such a way that you're in it for the long term and you're not courting burnout. So depending on the goal, that all or nothing thinking can serve them. But more often than not, we are addressing that and adjusting expectations and goals to get them in the game and stay in the game for the long term.
And we're going to talk about burnout and some of the related factors here around maintaining balance. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Even more specific about the importance of goal setting for salespeople and how it can help fuel greater achievement. Can you talk about a little bit more about this difference between outcomes-based and process-focused goals? And also then, if we can talk about importance and maybe the process of time spent on the why of goals. That can often be dismissed, and maybe it's dismissed not for any other reason other than people don't really know how to focus on that why factor.
The highest compliments I ever got around time spent on the why, and I call it a vision statement. And this is just you describing exactly what you want to accomplish, where you want to be, how it feels, why it's important. We're going to do that first before we set goals. We went through all that. We set goals. And this was someone who has achieved a lot of great things in his professional life. And he came back and he said, I've done these exercises before, the whole vision thing, and I never thought much of them. So I wasn't expecting very much this go around, but I have to say it was really helpful. It is something that, as you said, it's often overlooked, and probably because how do we get there? One, understanding why it's important, but two, how do we get there? Really simple place to start for most people is start with your initial goal and then come back and ask the question, what about this goal is important to me? And answer that question. When words like things like achievement, confidence, build it out. What's the benefit of more confidence in my life? Where will that serve me? Think about all the different areas of your life and really strive to expand it to all areas of your life. How is being more confident at work going to serve me in my relationships at home? How is achieving this goal going to make me a better parent, a better spouse? What is it about these that are important to me?
If you want it related to what you want to achieve with your family, it gets into that idea of what you're willing to do and maintaining that balance and preventing burnout and all of those things. But it also then gets back to this idea of making the goals process focused, right?
How is it that I'm going to get there? How am I going to show up differently? What are the actions that I'm going to take? So moving from outcome goals, I'm going to hit X number of sales, this bring in, land this many clients, run a marathon. Those are outcomes. This is where I find people need a lot of help in setting goals, is switching them from outcome to process. And here's a question that I ask and that you can ask yourself in making that switch. You have your long-term goal. Now let's zoom in a bit and think about, what would you like to be doing consistently 3 months from now that moves you closer to that goal? So people can set, probably people are not strangers to the idea of SMART goals. You can set SMART goals that check all the boxes, but they're still outcome oriented. Apply that to process goals. How are you going to get there? What is it that you're going to be doing to move you closer to that outcome goal? So trust that the process is going to get you to the outcome.
You started to allude to this earlier. I want to get into it now. And this idea of preventing burnout, which a lot of people in the workplace face, it's a huge problem today. It's especially a big problem with people that are in sales, where our turnover and retention rates are out of balance, I would say, with most of the rest of an organization. But you've written and talked a lot about how to go from, quote, burnout to balance. And I think one of the things that most salespeople crave is greater work-life balance, but that's a lot easier said than done, especially if you're a salesperson who is not necessarily in control of all your priorities day-to-day based on requests and needs from customers that you just can't anticipate. How do you create goals that are attainable, they get you out of your comfort zone, but they're not going to just cause you to burn out along the way?
Yeah, there's kind of two parts to this. And one is embracing what you can control. And that's completely what we focus on in coaching. We accept that there are variables that we have no say over. That's just the reality of our, what we're facing. What we are focusing on is, what are the decisions that you can make that will make a difference in how you feel about work-life balance? And first we start off by identifying, what does it mean to you? What would that look like in your life? And what that looks like for one person at one stage of their career, complete 180, couldn't be more different than someone later in their career has. It's completely self-defined. Where do you feel like there is an area of neglect that you would like to bring more intention to this? And in the beginning, often what we're dealing with initial weeks, let's look at next week, 2 weeks out, we're often dealing with the leftovers, the scraps of your time, your energy, the calendar capacity. We plug in, we look at, okay, where can we create a little movement intention with what we've got? But at some point, we're going to want to switch over and get ahead of this and start designing a day and a life that reflects your priorities. I talk about, you know, being known for your priorities. So there are people who, they block out Fridays. That's their heads down day. They acknowledge they need that time and space to be creative, to get administrative, whatever it is, it's really important to them. While they can't do anything about it in the next 2 weeks, what they can do is go into 2024 and start blocking out that time, putting it on the calendar, making it a priority, and often talk about There's scheduling something and there's protecting something. Those are two very different things. And people know what I'm talking about. They'll go, oh yeah, I'm good at scheduling, but the protecting part, not so much.
In sales and in a lot of other roles, there's sort of a seasonality to what they have to do throughout the year. And I think part of, I don't want to say lazy, but it's oversimplistic to take a goal and just say, whatever the goal is, I'm going to divide it by 12. And that's my goal for every month, or divide it by 4. And that's my goal for every quarter. When there's a degree of seasonality, meaning, I don't know, for example, if you're on vacation with your family for 2 weeks in July, you're setting yourself up for failure if your goal for July is the same as it is for March, April, and May. There are certain aspects of your responsibility and your role that this pops up in August and this pops up in November that needs to factor into that. So again, you're not driving yourself into the ground along the way when it's just not feasible to, again, divide things that evenly, right?
This is why goal setting is one of my favorite parts, because there's a question in goal setting where we check in on this. So a goal has been set. No matter what kind of energy I'm sensing in the moment, they are excited about it. They feel good about it. They state it with confidence. I'll check in. So you have this goal. On a scale of 1 to 10, how doable does it feel? Think about what you've got on your plate, what you've got coming up. I've had people without skipping a beat say, 4. Okay. That is a clear signal. We need to rework this goal. So tell me what makes it a 4. And all the things you just mentioned, whether it's vacation, whatever it is, let's go back to the drawing board. We do not move forward with a 4. What part of this goal do we need to adjust, recalibrate to boost your confidence? We don't want to do is try and push ahead with something that you have very little confidence in achieving. So that's where these kind of things often get revealed, is we set a goal and, oh no, this is not going to work because of this. So either they remember, or for maybe for the first time, they're just reflecting on the seasonality of life. It's rarely this linear, all things are equal. For high achievers, it's almost like giving them permission to recalibrate. They hadn't really considered that before. Like if you have a goal, you go after a goal and it looks the same no matter what. Like now let's be strategic about this.
And it gets back to that idea of why you've got to spend really investing time in thinking through these things so that you can remember, oh, every May, I'm actually at these client events for 2 weeks. So automatically half my month is pretty much spoken for, that sort of thing. That can take a while to reflect on and come up with, so that then you're building in those ebbs and flows. Is building on the sort of the topic of preventing burnout, what would you advise salespeople to do to help set boundaries better? And that can be with peers, it can be with their managers, with customers. How can people set boundaries better so that they are better from all the things that can potentially come at them, but do so in very kind and respectful ways, but in ways that are also going to prevent them from burning out?
First step is to embrace the idea that boundaries are an act of kindness, both to yourself and the other person. I definitely work with people who see boundaries as being mean. Couldn't be further from the truth. You are letting people know what's important to you and you're protecting those things. A first step is to do an audit of your thinking habits, your emotional habits, your response habits, your work habits. Do an audit. Look at where would boundaries be really useful. For myself, I found in the spirit of wanting to serve others, I had created a whole schedule for myself with boundaries, but I kept overriding them in the moment. So I'd have this protected Friday. Don't schedule anything on Friday. Someone would throw that out as a date and wanting to be accommodating to, I love coaching in the moment. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. It's okay. Just one session. When I sat back and reflected, it was not serving me well at all. I had put that in place for a reason. I had to get away from the idea that someone asking meant that was the only option, that I could come back and say, Friday's not available. What do you have next week, Tuesday through Thursday? So that there's always a win in there. But you have to know what kind of boundaries would serve you. Is it relationship boundaries? Is it your own scheduling boundaries? Where is the work that needs to be done? And again, come back to how will this make you better at what you do? in that moment when you're tempted, you can come back to, nope, I need to do this. And here is why.
And setting those boundaries, it doesn't have to be confrontational. You can set boundaries of, I'm not responding to emails after 9 o'clock at night or whatever it might be. And maybe you don't even need to overtly say it. You just do it. And just like people can invite you to meetings and maybe a time on your calendar is open, and but you don't have to, I don't know what the phrase is for it, but you can have available time, but still not be available depending on some other things that you have going on. So just because somebody invites you to something, you don't have to say yes, even if, you know, that time frame on your calendar is open. You can be clear with somebody of, hey, I've got X, Y, and Z going on right now. And I know my calendar says I'm open, but let's actually do this next week or whatever the case may be.
It's not mutually exclusive, like boundaries and kindness. It's really important to be aware of this kind of thinking that crops up, like, oh, because someone asked or because I had it open, I have to say yes, because to be aware of where you're thinking and how your perceptions are eliminating your boundaries.
Because otherwise you run the risk of spiraling into pure reactive mode and being on call for everybody all the time. And there's probably nothing that leads to burnout. Or almost nothing leads to burnout more than that, when you don't feel in control of your time, schedule, goals, all that sort of thing.
Not only reactive, but eventually resentful. You get resentful just by even the harmless ask. That's where that kindness piece comes back. Those boundaries, that's a way to let people know. And that's the most compassionate, kind things you can do.
We always think about goal setting for salespeople as a personal, but it's also should be a collaborative effort with your leader, your manager. But let's talk about what your perspective is on the role of a sales leader, what that role is, and conversely, what it is not in helping salespeople set attainable goals and meaningful goals.
Where leaders can be really helpful is to help people think through what excites them about the goal. And work together to the degree that you can to set goals. The person feels ownership around them. And to have conversations to help connect them to how this connects to other parts of their life, building up that library of why. And helping them set good goals. Some of these will be set and the person has to meet certain things. But having conversations around what's going to help get you there. So that's moving from the outcome of what's expected to, now let's get individualized. What's going to help you get there? When you look at your day-to-day, what's going to be challenging? What's going to get in the way? Talking through all of those things, they're not only they've been addressed. Now there's a game plan for both the, here's when things are going well, this is what I'm going to do, but inevitably there will be roadblocks. Let's talk through those. How are you going to handle those? And then helping people identify what's the system for check-in here? And as a leader, always leading by example.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, the leading by example thing is big. And as you just said, the check-in conversations that have to happen regularly to help people articulate what's going well, where they're getting tripped up, where they're maybe their confidence is waning a little bit, all those sorts of things. And the other subtle thing that you said that I thought was important is you said conversations, plural. Not singular, because a goal setting shouldn't just be as most likely not part of a single sit down because it requires so much more deep thought. So you might require multiple conversations around this time of year. And again, leading into the new year to really have those crystallize and come to agreement on what they are.
Here's a tip for leaders to add to their check-in. When I coach people, 8% of anything that I say, a reflection, a question, there is an intention behind it. A tip for leaders when you're doing check-ins, tell me what's going well. Most people will have that as something to check in around. Here's the next layer to that. What's going well and why is it going well? So this is an opportunity to have a conversation around what the person is doing to contribute to the success. So it's an opportunity for the person to think about, what am I doing that is working out? And definitely want to do more of that. What strengths have I leaned into? So it allows that ownership again. It's a reminder that you are taking part in this process, that things aren't just happening to you, you're making them happen. And to give yourself credit for it, because that's the part that's often missing, especially when you set outcome goals, because the weight of how you feel is in the hands of an outcome. When you create a process goal, you have countless opportunities to identify wins, what's going well. In addition to what's not working, we don't overlook that, but you appreciate and reflect on the process and the wins along the way. So it's not just in the hands of a singular event or outcome. And that's what you're basing how you feel about the whole thing.
Sounds simple, but it's a lot easier for somebody to write down 3, 4, 5 bullets of what's going well. It's harder to double click under each of those and really think about why are they going well. And I think, as you were saying, if you can really articulate those things, it can be a big confidence booster because you can see that, oh, I really can do this. You can almost relate or bring some of those things of why they're going and transfer them over to some of the things that aren't. Use them to fuel those things that aren't going quite as well.
When you are looking at what's going why and what isn't working out so well, more often than not, we're going to leave those behind. If we approach everything as an experiment, here's my plan. This isn't working, but here's what is working. And I'm going to keep at that. Where can I leverage what is or infuse that into what isn't and see if we can get a different outcome?
Any other guidance that you might be able to offer listeners or people that are in sales roles, they're sales leaders, other guidance for mental health and wellness for starting the year off right, and any little things that can help lift you up when those inevitable challenging times happen in sales throughout the year?
I think that's the beauty of the process written goal, is that you have this all kind of built in. How you feel about what's happening isn't dependent upon something that's off in the future. You are able to check in and look at your accomplishments along the way. Here is a selling point for writing things down. I do have a process for checking in. I have a daily process, weekly, monthly, quarterly, yearly. I was at my weekly check-in. One of my first questions is, what did you accomplish this week? And I immediately said, nothing. And I wrote that down and I probably put a mad face next to it. And I was not happy with myself. I wasn't productive that week. And then I went back and looked at the goals that I had set for the week and had written down. I had accomplished every single one. That's how bad our memory is. And so you cannot rely on your memory to make sure you catch all the wins. A case for writing things down. So having a system for checking in. Again, this will serve you well as you go through the ups and downs that are to be expected. In a down period, you can reflect on, this is what's going to work. It's been working. You can reflect on your previous wins. I've been through this before. Here's what I need to do. So it helps you to regulate, expect the ups and downs. That's a part of it, but you're prepared for them and you have systems for checking in.
Help yourself recognize those patterns. And sales is one of those functions where there are inevitable patterns. It's not a linear path throughout the year, all that sort of thing. And you're right, our memories can and often do betray us. It's that idea of, if you do 9 things right and 1 thing wrong, what's going to stand out to you and what are you going to keep reflecting on? Probably that one thing. Gene, thank you again so much for being with us on the show today. I really appreciate you sharing these perspectives with us. They're really valuable to think about and for everyone listening to allocate time for anytime, but especially at this time of year. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
And you're our final guest of 2023. So I think this is a really great way to end the year. For listeners, we will have one smaller episode right toward the end of the year. But for anybody listening, you can find and follow Gene Torrey on LinkedIn, as well as on Twitter at jtorreycoaching. That's T-O-R-E. And her website is highlandwellnessgroup.com. So you'll see in all of those places, Gene talk and write about a lot of the things that we've been discussing here. Thanks to everybody for listening to us today and throughout the year. We really appreciate all of the support and feedback. Please leave us, if you haven't already, a rating or a comment. Make sure you're subscribed. And also at this time of year, go back and maybe take a look at some previous episodes. If there are a few that came out that you hadn't heard yet, you can catch up on those hopefully over the holidays. Thanks everybody for joining us today, from wherever and whenever you might be listening. And we will look forward to having you with us again next time. Thanks, everyone. Thank you for listening. And I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed and As always, leave us a comment or a rating, share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.